học gà nướng, học vịt lộn, học vịt sữa, trứng cút lộn, bắp xào đây.
Hey, this is Neil Mackay, your host of a Vietnam podcast. Now, before we get started on this episode, I wanted to share with you about one of my favorite affiliate partners, and that is Fiverr. I've been using Fiverr for years for everything from ordering YouTube thumbnails to keyword research, writing podcast articles, even to Canva designs and thumbnails and more. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a podcaster, or anyone in between, Fiverr has got you covered. It really is the go-to platform if you want to find freelancers offering a massive range of services to help you on any project. Maybe you need a stunning new logo or just a short animation, whatever you need, you can find it on Fiverr. What I love the most is how easy Fiverr makes it to connect with talented freelancers from around the world, all at prices that will fit whatever your budget is. Plus, with Fiverr's secure payment system, you can trust that your transactions are safe and secure. No dodgy people you meet on Facebook groups that disappear with your money and never give you what you want. What, that's only happened to me? As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you use the link and at no extra cost to you. As an affiliate partner, I will get a small commission if you click my link and you buy something, all at no extra cost to you. And best of all, you will be directly supporting the making of this podcast that you're listening to for free, but it is not free to make. So why wait? Head over to somewhere that you've probably never been before. It's called the show notes. So whatever app you're listening in, if it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anything at all, head to the show notes, click on my special link, and then you can browse thousands of gigs ready to help you with your next project. And now, let's dive into today's episode. Let's go. Ever heard a joke and wondered, did that really happen? My name's Neil Mackay, host of a Vietnam podcast and a comedian. Long before I ever started comedy, when I heard comedians tell the craziest, funniest stories, I would always wonder just this. And if I got the chance to meet them after the show, I would always ask them straight away, did that really happen? 9 times out of 10, the answer was yes. But the difference between sharing a funny story with friends and telling it on stage is a comedian's ability to take those moments and craft them into a well-worked joke. In each episode of this podcast, we'll talk to comedians from around the world, play you one of their favorite jokes, then ask them, did that really happen? My guest today is Paul Villanova, an Australian who sold out shows in Hanoi, performed all over Vietnam, in Hanoi, Da Lat and Saigon, and was lucky enough to be part of Comedy Oi, Vietnam's first comedy festival. This weekend, on June 5th, he's playing One Night in Saigon, Paul Villanova, at Eddie's Diner with 7 Million Bikes. So hopefully you can join us there. Let's hear his joke.
And she works on these really, really rich people's yachts around the world. It's funny, like, you think about really, really wealthy people, and it's a shame that just because you have wealth doesn't make you, like, a good person, right? And they can sort of, they make you have, like, weird friends, right? So through my sister being on the yacht, she's met some, I'm named three really famous people, right? Levels of fame, right? And I want you guys to cheer for how famous you think they are, okay? So here's the first one. She's met Roman Abramovich's ex-wife. Sort of famous, right? Sort of famous. Okay. No idea. All right. This next one is when you know. She's met Bill Murray. Right? Bill Murray's pretty cool. Fuck yeah. I love me some Bill Murray. It's great. And the other person that she's met, who's famous, is Harvey Weinstein. Oh. Yeah, like I said, rich people don't have great friends. It's funny, so she was telling me she was in Nicaragua, and one of the dogs on board, that's like $4, one of the dogs goes missing at night. And in the morning, they just find some like pieces of it, like something's got a piece of jungle or something. and the crew gets it and tell the boss, and the boss is like, oh,
okay.
Just put it in the box. It's fine. It's weird that he doesn't care about his dog dying, right? Like, it's weird. But then the thing that reason he doesn't care is because that dog, the clone, as is the other dog on board, all four dogs are clones of a dog. Fucking insane to me. How much do you think it costs to clone a dog in the US? This research, this is a fun Google search, and it was about $50,000 to clone one pooch, right? Which is quite cheap.
Yeah, seriously. Some people spend
$50,000
on $1 dog.
How many dogs have you cloned? There's a caveat, and the caveat is, it only works about 30% of the time. So to clone four dogs, it's like most likely over $500,000 US. Fucking insane. But I think it's like the ultimate rich guy flex to like spend that sort of money on something so ridiculous, right? I like to imagine that the owner of the cloned dog, he's there, he's hanging out with one of his buddies, another wealthy guy. Let's say he's not as bad a person as Harvey Weinstein. So that's a pretty bold statement. Like, he's hanging with him and his buddy's like, oh, I have these gold and diamond encrusted rims on my Lamborghini that are worth more than my Lamborghini. It's pretty cool. And the dog goes like, well, I have cloned dogs on my super yacht worth more than my yacht. That's a rich guy flex right there.
So, Paul, did that really happen?
Yes. It did happen of sorts, and then it added some stuff, but yeah, it's an amalgamation of stuff as well, but yeah, it did happen.
Well, so that, I mean, and this is what we've talked about repeatedly, obviously, on the podcast, and that's what I love about jokes, is that word you just used there, amalgamation, right? Because even, so I don't know your answer to this question, I assumed, to be honest, listening to your joke, I assumed it was 100% true and you were just telling the story verbatim. So I always find it really interesting that then you're like, well, yeah, it's true, but like kind of true. So explain about the joke. What happened? What didn't happen? How did you put it together?
Yeah, like my sister does work on these yachts and stuff, and she does that. She told me this story and I could not believe it when she told me. Like, I thought it was hilarious. And I told my friends. And then I'm like, oh, like I thought it'd be funny to tell as like a joke. And I thought of like other sort of tags and bits on top of it. And then I was like, I felt like I needed to talk to her and finalize some stuff as well, because she signed like an NDA to work on those yachts and then in work environment. You just sign like NDAs, like, so you can't disclose information about all these rich people. So I'm like, oh, it's not like famous, really famous or anything. And people are going to hear about these people. But like, I changed some like minor details about like locations and stuff like that, so that, yeah, it's not, I don't know, I don't want to get sued. The funny thing is, like, this is, so she's had this career working on these yachts for 12, 14 years. And she's met like lots of people through this and bits and pieces like that. And when she told me about the cloned dogs thing, I just seemed like a crazy amount of money to spend on something that could die like any second. But yeah, I don't know, it's very weird to me as well.
I didn't even know that was possible. Like, obviously I know, like, I'm from Scotland, we cloned Dolly the sheep there, so I know cloning animals is possible, but I didn't know it was like a commercial thing that you could do it. And after I listened to your joke, I had to Google it as well to see, like, because you say in the joke it cost $50,000, so I Googled it as well. I was like, is that really true? And yeah, absolutely. Like $50,000 to clone a dog.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 50,000. And then, like I said, the joke, it only works like 30% of the time. So like for to get one clone dog, you might very reasonably spend $150,000, which is just insane. The best part about all the dog stuff is basically since that happened, like this, that would have happened when she told me like 12 to 15 months ago. Since that happened, he replaced the dog with another clone, like the one that died. So just in perpetuity, gonna be like that. Yeah, my sister says he's quite he's quite rude and impersonal. I think he's been a wealthy guy who hasn't ever had to like be nice to people and or never been brought up with that way in terms of like for the staff. It's like, you work for me, you do this. Like there's never any like polite chit chat with the big boss, but he's really passionate and loving and caring when he's around his dogs. But I don't know. Did you ever hear that Barbara Streisand cloned her dog?
No.
So I remember hearing that like years ago. So I remember hearing that years ago and like hearing jokes about that. Like I'm talking 10 plus years ago. But yeah, I love the way that I told it the last time that people started arguing with me in the crowd about how much it costs. But it's like, well, I guess that is true. It doesn't seem like a lot, or it does, but
I mean, if you're
just a dog pets anyway, right?
If you're a billionaire, I mean, 50,000 is just chump change, right? It really is nothing. You can't fathom, like, when you have that much money, how a year's salary to someone is literally like, if it fell out your pocket, you wouldn't even notice it. It's insane.
Yeah. It's that thing. I don't know if you ever watched the Last Dance, the Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls documentary.
There's too much good TV. It's like, it's one of these things I want to watch. It's like, I just don't have enough hours in the day to watch all these amazing TV shows that come out. Never mind all the YouTube content that people make and TikTok and split. Oh my goodness. You're drowning in good content. Anyway, yeah, go on.
My basic point is that the media at one point was going on about how that Michael Jordan has a gambling problem and all this sort of stuff like that. And he's going to casinos and he's spending like 200 grand in a night, 400 grand, something like that. Right. And people are like, oh, that's crazy. You're blowing all your money and all this sort of stuff. He was earning like 40, 50 million a year, like between on court, like, my money and off court money from sponsorship and stuff. So legit, it's chump change. So like, it's like, oh, I'm going to go out and have a fun night. I'm going to spend this amount of money. It's nothing to me. And it really is like, you know, you're never going to hear any stories about Michael Jordan going broke. Like that's never going to happen. it's all relative.
He still gets money from sponsorship and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, like, because like basically there's Jordan brand for like in the basketball world, which is huge. I still think he's in the top 10 for revenue for athletes, even though he literally retired in 2004.
Well, just Googled a couple of things as well. So did you realize it's, if you're not in the billionaire category, you could still clone your cat for just $30,000. So it's a bit cheaper. But if you have a horse that you have an affinity for, you can clone your horse for $85,000.
Yeah, that's not hard at all, but crazy. There is I'm going to do research before. And so there is this, like, what was this like famous sort of celebrity bull, right? So it's from Texas and it was famous. It was a big Brahma bull from memory. So it had these big, massive horns. I would have weighed like a ton, like huge bull. But it had a really, really placid temperament. So basically the owner would take it around and people would take photos with it and go to these shows and people would take photos with it and people would sit on it and kids would sit on it. Like there was something where like it had photos with prior to, I think both Bush presidents took photos with, I think Clinton as well. Like it was a celebrity bull. Anyway, the bull got given like a terminal diagnosis with like a cancer or something like that. And the owners of the bull like really, really loved the bull. So they're like, oh, I'm going to see if I can get it cloned. There was a university that was close to them that had done work on the bull before, like the veterinary part there. And they're like, oh, actually, yeah, we'll clone the bull. So they clone the bull and the bull perishes and then they get the clone and they're like, yeah, I must remember that this cloned bull is not going to have the same temperament, right? It's a clone. Temperament and behavior is like product of your environment and other stuff. But it grew up and the bull looked exactly the same. And the owners are like, oh, it is the same bull. We love the bull. It's pack. And then the bull gored the owner like through his leg. And then that bull ended up living for like 6-7 years, whereas the other one I think was like 30 or something. But yeah, crazy clone stories, man.
I think you're going to add that to the jewel. That's brilliant. I was like waiting for that. Then I was like, what did the bull do? That's a great add-on. And I just Googled it there as well. Barbara Streisand cloned her dog twice. She made two clones for one dog.
Yep.
Super flex, I just as you said.
Wonder how much. Yeah. Well, isn't it like a thing that how much genetic material you have is going to diminish? Like, so the quality of the clone, like you can't get a clone from a clone without it being as good a quality, and then the quality of life and the life expectancy goes down.
I'm not an expert in genetics. I'm not too sure on that one.
You guys invented cloning.
I know, right? But with the one with Barbara Streisand, it wasn't a clone of a clone. When the one dog died, she made two clones from the one dog, from the original dog. Anyways, moving on from clones. So, tell us a bit more about your comedy in general. Like what kind of, how would you describe yourself as a comedian? How do you come up with your jokes? We've talked about it before as well. Are you a comedian who sits down and like writes jokes? Do you find some spare time and sit down and think of jokes and write them? Or do you just think the things happen and then you take that, put it on stage? What's your style?
Yeah, I'm more of a storyteller. I think when I first started, I definitely wanted to tell stories because I was terrified of like losing my place. So I would tell stories, and then I was like, well, if I forget like the jokes, I can just tell the story. So yeah, I have like lots of different stories about all sorts of things. Most of the time, like I'll forget about, the most time I think of a joke or I think of something is when I'm riding a bike, which is the worst time to think of something. So like I'm going to pull over and like write it down on the road.
No, exact same. I just had this conversation with someone, I think it was a Damien on the weekend or just last week. I'm the exact same. Most of the material I think of is when I'm riding on the bike and I've got nothing else to think about. Maybe I see something or I'm thinking about something. But you're right. Sometimes then I forget it. I get to my destination and I'm like, what was that joke again I had? And I have to like sit and think. So yeah, you have to make a real effort to make sure like don't forget what you just thought of.
Yeah, but I don't know, that's like it's a weird sort of good filtering process though, because in theory, if it's good enough for you to remember, but it's good enough for you to like, to try to write down, and then it's funny, it's just like, I have the bike filter on my jokes, and then, I know, you write stuff down, and it's like the rule of 10 applies a lot, right? Like, or like one thing in 10 will work.
I hadn't even heard that before, is that right?
Have you heard that? So you write down 10 jokes and one of them will be good. Like,
yeah, right.
It's like murdering your babies. It's sometimes the jokes, like you'll tell them and it'll go nowhere. Or like that you'll tell a story and people will really laugh and think it's funny, but that's because they know you or they know elements and the story and could connect really well. But like I've told stories about playing football in Australia to like Dutch friends here, and they're like, okay, cool. Like there's just like no connective tissue. Talking about the joke, so I got this other bit that I put on the joke that I sort of cut out of the bit that I say you, where I would talk about rich guys flexing. But I know I wrote it and I put references in that, like I did like sort of three levels of that. And I put like three like sort of common references that like billionaires, like what's like the ultimate rich guy flex? And it's like going to space, right? And then I had references about Elon Musk, Richard Branson, and Jeff Bezos, right? And like two of those three are really famous globally. And then Branson is so much more of a British thing. So like I remember telling that joke and there being like two British people on in the crowd and like one of them laughed and I'm like, so I basically made a joke about Richard Branson was done fucking over the NHS. So he's going to go to space and take someone who can't afford their healthcare with him, which I don't know, I think that's funny, but I'm making a British healthcare joke.
I guess it's really different. I mean, obviously we're both not from Vietnam, but perform in Vietnam. So most of our audiences are inherently very international. Like there's people from all over the world and Vietnam. So yeah, I've not thought about that too much, but yeah, you do really have to make sure your jokes appeal to the broader audience, right? Because I have seen one comedian perform in Saigon one time, and he was British, and his jokes were just all British, and even I didn't really find them that funny, and I was like, who is he telling these jokes to? Like, this audience are not like British, like they won't get the references. And he did his whole set. It was as if he was performing in like a club in the UK, like a local working man's club or something like that. And I was like, I think these things through a bit more, right? But I got one joke where the punchline is only, and I know before I do it, it's only applies to English people. Like, they're the only people that would understand why I made this joke. But I still do it because I only do it when I start to have a conversation on stage with an English person. And then I tell the punchline, which is all about that they don't accept Scottish money in England. See, I don't even know if you knew this. When I was growing up, when I would go on holiday to England, if you gave them like a Scottish banknote, they would refuse it. They would say, oh no, we don't accept this here. And so we'd have to go change our money at the bank, Scottish notes to English notes, even though they're the same legal tender in the UK. So anyway, I tell this joke knowing full well that anyone who's not English, and even some of the English, might not get it, but I just can't help it. So I do the punchline. The English people will generally laugh, and then I have to explain it to everyone else, which I know is probably the worst thing you should do in comedy, is then have to explain your joke. But
yeah,
I do it anyway, because I know that at least I do it because I know that they don't understand it. So then at least they're in on the joke and not just like saying a punchline that two people get.
Yeah. I think. I've performed outside of Vietnam like once or twice. I performed twice, like when I was real fresh starting comedy in Australia. And I just wonder now if I've got lots of jokes that are like so Vietnam centric, they weren't working in other environments. Mm. Like, I've got like this joke, I made this joke about like the black police in Vietnam, right? And it's like, oh, and by black police, I mean like the police who wear black, like, cause they're the ones you need to watch out for. And like all Vietnam, like most Westerners would know that they're like the SWAT, like they're the badass cops. But all the most Vietnamese, I only get like lots of nods and stuff like that. But I'm like, that joke will never work out of Vietnam. Like, it's so local centric.
Well, the first time I performed in Scotland when I went home at an open mic, and one of my probably like most popular, best received jokes is when I talk about going back. I do it in Vietnam where I talk about going back to Scotland and having a reverse culture shock, and then the policeman stopping me in the street for drinking a beer in the street. So I offer him my dong because I was used to living in Vietnam. And then there's a punchline all around that and stuff. And so when I did that in Scotland, all I added, I was like, right, is this going to work or not? So all I added was at the beginning, does anyone know what the currency is in Vietnam? And sure enough, a couple of people had been, they were like, dong, which people find funny enough right away, right? So already the audiences are laughing at that, whether they knew it or not. Then told the joke and it still got a massive laugh. So I was like, that's amazing. It worked over here. And then last week I was in Thailand and I basically cut out all my Vietnam jokes and just had other jokes based on Scotland and being a teacher, things like this. But then one of the other comedians got up and he was listing all these things. All he was talking about, the joke was that in Thailand, they take wearing masks like really seriously, again, similar to here. And he was like, I wish they took it as seriously as like waiting for someone to get in the lift or... and like a whole bunch of other things. And as he was listing these things off, I was looking at Adrian, I'm like, this all happens in Vietnam as well. And I was like, it is the same here, because there was a lot of these things I was like, I could have used jokes for, but I was like, I didn't know if they were going to translate the same. But I was like, it is the same.
Yeah, I know. It's, if you're making like was it sort of like cultural observation jokes, right? What's the line between that being, oh, that's just in this country, to that being like, oh, all Asian countries, or like, oh, like, you're like, wait, is that like a weird form of racism to just assume that like, oh, they have bangmies everywhere in Asia? No, of course they fucking don't. like,
yeah,
it's like a weird line about that, right?
Yeah, and the getting in and out of the lift thing is like infuriating here. And I had it last week where I was in the lift and a girl walked in the lift before even letting me out. Like, walked. I was like, why would you not let me out of the lift? Not just like standing there and blocking the entrance. She walked in, looked at me, walked in, and I was like, what is going on here? Like, anyway, but I didn't know that that happened in other countries in Asia as well. So I wasn't going to make like a joke about that, like, as you say, for an example, and you don't want to do that. Kind of, yeah.
I think that's the crowding and yeah, yeah. Well, it's the sort of stuff that maybe if you were at a pub back home, working at some working man's pub, you probably could do that. And then people would laugh at the racist part of it. And you're like, wait, oh, fuck.
yeah, that's not the point. Well, listen, thank you so much, Paul. This has been a long time coming. Now, for anyone listening, if you are here in Saigon, we have a big show coming up on Sunday, June 5th, called One Night in Saigon, Paul Villanova. Tell us about the show coming up. We're partnering with myself, 7 Million Bikes, and we're going to be hosting it at the Eddie's Diner in D2. Tell people about the show. What's happening?
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's that for the first time doing a headline show with Saigon, which is very exciting for me. So I'm doing that. I'll be doing like a 20-30 minute set. Should be some fun. Hear more of my stories. I do have a song I'm going to sing about Grab. Well, I sort of sing. I'm talking, and it's got some other great comics. So very proud to say I've performed with other comics multiple times now. I think Wanye West, love Wanye West. He's a legend. Just don't tell him that I said that. Of course, Ankita is amazing. I love Ankita. And she's going to do big comedy things this year, traveling around the world. Awesome.
Sweet. And then
you're going to be there as well, right?
I was going to say, yeah, and you got myself hosting as well. So if you want to come to that, I'll put the link in the show notes to buy tickets. If it's not too late right now, this episode is going to be going out on the 31st of May, and the show is going to be on Sunday, June 5th. So if you're listening to this before June 5th, get your tickets. The link is in the notes of this podcast. So Paul, awesome. Thank you so much. Have an amazing day, and I will see you soon for One Night in Saigon.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Neil.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to this episode of Did That Really Happen? A new podcast from 7 Million Bikes. I've been your host, Neil Mackay. If you enjoyed that and want to hear from comedians around the world about their jokes and if they are true, then make sure to follow and subscribe from wherever you are listening from right now, and follow 7 Million Bikes on social media. The links are in the show notes. Cheers. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're like me, you may use your laptop at places where you have to use public Wi-Fi. This opens you up to digital snoopers. It's a massive problem. It can be your internet service provider, or you know who, looking at what you do online, or a cyber criminal trying to steal your bank passwords or credit card info, or even a hacker at the next table trying to steal your sensitive data. These days, it is vital that you keep your data safe. NordVPN keeps all of these snoopers away. It makes your internet activity private, protects you from accessing dangerous websites that are phishing for your data, and lets you enjoy your favorite content securely, even while away from home. And it's easy to use, even I could use it. I've actually been using NordVPN for years now here in Vietnam, and I'm excited to be an affiliate partner with them. I've used NordVPN to watch Netflix, BBC, Disney Plus with ease. And I also know that my information and data are safe from prying eyes, whoever they may be. Join now and you'll get 68% off and 3 months free when you go to my link, nordvpn.com/SMB. Just again, for those hard of hearing, nordvpn.com/SMB. The link is also in the show notes. I know nobody checks them out, but go check that out and you can get the link from wherever you are listening to this podcast. As an affiliate partner, it also means that I will get a small commission when you sign up, but at no extra cost to you. So not only will you be getting a great deal through 7 Million Bikes, you get a great VPN and you'll be supporting 7 Million Bikes podcast. Stay safe online and enjoy the shows you love.
Any questions, just let me know. You know how to get in touch with me. And thanks for listening to the show. Cheers.